Hello, this is The Leg Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel #LinuxShow. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
And we're back.
It's The Linux Show for Tuesday, September the 23rd, 2003. We're back after a week of hiatus doing the conference thing, everybody going off into different directions and doing our little gigs, actually making a little money for a change. It's been an interesting couple of weeks, and we're back here with a full schedule of news to catch up on and bring you pretty much a normal show, with the exception of we're not going to have a guest tonight because we got so much news to catch up on. The entire panel is here for a change, and we also might have a guest panelist a little later on. Robin Miller of Slashdot is right now at a lug party, and presuming he doesn't drink too much, he might be calling in right towards the end of the show or the show just to say hi. But the whole panel is here tonight. Doc is back from Geek Cruise. How are you, Doc?
I'm fine. Having a good time. Catching up, it's huge. I mean, I brought back way too many notes and recordings and pictures and other things that I'm trying to put together for something I'd hoped to have up at Linux Journal before today, but alas, it's not going to happen that fast, but it will.
And that cruise was in Alaska?
They build these as the inside passage, but to get to a lot of where it wanted to go, it went outside. And so we didn't go inside through, say, British Columbia, but we did go inside to go to Juneau and Glacier Bay and Ketchikan and Sitka. And of those, Juneau and Glacier Bay were very interesting. We also went to Victoria at the end of it. We hit two lugs there too. The Juneau lug was very cool, and so was the Victoria lug in Victoria, British Columbia. So that was J-Lug and V-Lug. I'm sure there are other J's and V's in the world, but they were cool guys in both cases. You know, in Juneau, they showed up with a big placard and a 12-pack of free beer and brought us home for beers and brats, that's like as in bratwurst, an Alaska tradition. And you know, we got to play with Wi-Fi on their deck and see how many singles we could get, which was a bunch, actually. It was pretty cool. And just talked a lot of trash, had a really good time. And at the V-Lug, there were 30 of us that came from the boat to that. And it was a meeting of a total of 80 people in the room. And that was a lot of fun, too. They got a chance to ask Linus a bunch of questions. Linus didn't come along in the first one, but he came along in the second one. And Linus gave a talk on the boat, and so did Ted Sho and other people. I'm transcribing Linus's talk, which had covered lots and lots of ground. Very interesting stuff, which if we have a chance to talk about later, we will.
Yes, we will. We absolutely will. But how are you, Arnie?
Oh, everything's fine. Yeah, 2 days ago it was 113 degrees in Fontana. That's where my high school is. We've had the last, I think this is the last blast of summer, hopefully. And today it's relatively, I've got the door open to the office, and it's relatively, the air conditioning is off, and it's cooled down quite a bit, so it's kind of nice.
But it's relatively cool, it's down to 98 degrees?
Well, no, it got into the 90s today, but there's basically, the weather's coming from the, what they call an offshore flow. It's coming from weather's blowing in from the coast, which cools things down. Hopefully I'll stay that way. Last night I was out the back of my office and looking up at the sky. There's no lights there, and I could see the Orion Nebula very clearly overhead. Actually, it was this late last night, early this morning, and Orion, very clear skies for a change, so the weather change is on its way here. When it gets real hot here, it's really smoggy, and you can't see the stars. So,
well, I've been out on the back porch this last month a real lot because of Mars with my telescope. But
yeah.
I tell you, even when the sky's clear and my 4.5-inch telescope, it's still just a little red dot.
Oh, you should be able to resolve a disc with a 4.5-inch. I can resolve a disc with my my little binoculars.
I can see a little round dot.
Yeah.
You said about Mars?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate to say it. I mean, you know, to me, the difference between the usual Mars and this Mars is the difference between two LEDs, essentially. You know, it was interesting, and statistically, you know, that it was closer at this point than any other time in history. But there's so many other, I think, frankly, more interesting sights in the sky on a clear night that vary also, you know. And are just, you know, I mean, the Andromeda galaxy and any number of nebulas that are up at this time, all the rich star fields in Sagittarius, for example, are really great.
Yeah, Pleiades just came up a couple of days ago.
Right, right. All the stuff in Taurus is coming up now. There's just a lot of cool stuff out there. It's been fun to do the Mars thing, but it almost every time there's a great big story in the mainstream press about an astronomical event. It almost always involves something that's a little bit of a dud. It happened with Kahutek. It happened with Halley's Comet, which had the worst pass ever in the late 80s. And it's happened with a number of other comets where, you know, because Halley's and Kahutek were so overhyped, got underhyped, even though they were spectacular.
And there was Hayakutake, which blew everybody away.
Spectacular and didn't get nearly the press that either Halley's or Kahutek got. There was a comet in the mid-70s called Comet West that was the best I've ever seen, and it just happened to come 3 years after Kahutek, and nobody covered it. And it was huge. It was a beautiful thing. It was about 10 moons wide at its best, and it was like a first magnitude object when it was at its best position in the sky. It's quite amazing. It's cool. We get clear skies. I get to see the Northern Lights for the first time from the ground.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My sister, who shared a large cabin, a suite kind of that we had on the boat, woke me up in the middle of the night and said, "I think you should check this out because the green clouds seem to be moving." And it was pretty cool. It looked like cirrus clouds, and all of a sudden, wait a minute, those went away. Some other ones appeared up here. There's some red in that one. Oh my God, that's the Northern Lights.
Yeah, well, very frequently during the late winter, there's this really strange weather pattern that sort of stimulates the flow of the Northern Lights a little more south than normal. And so we actually get them in southern Wisconsin and northern Illinois.
Yeah, if you look up aurora, just look up aurora on Google.
Yeah.
And one of the top links, it's maintained by the University of Michigan. There's a site that has aurora links. And there's a satellite called POES, P-O-E-S, that monitors every day what the aurora is doing and predicts where the halo is going to be. And it turned out that when we were there, the activity level was 9 out of 10. Because of some solar flares that had happened, and it pushed the halo, which normally peaks around Fairbanks, among civilized places. It pushed it down to Juneau, and so we were looking up at it, not far from Juneau. We were entering Glacier Bay at that time. It was quite something. And then it was supposed to happen again the next night, but it was overcast. But some people did see it. Bruce's parents went out and did see them off to the north, looking quite spectacular. So we did catch it at a good time, it turned out.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Well, Ross, on the other end of the spectrum, are you thoroughly bailed out yet from the 10th worst natural disaster in American history?
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't need to go searching the skies. The skies came searching for me. We had rain, we had wind. In a lot of ways, where we are in northern Maryland, we made out better than a lot of places. I mean, if you just go about 20 miles east of Baltimore, they had 5 to 7 foot rivers running through the streets down on the bayside, and just some amazing damage that's gone on around here. There's been flooding everywhere. We had a 50-foot tree come down in our backyard, but it was thankfully about the absolutely best place for a tree to come down in our backyard. With the exception of some damage to the farm style fence that was there, we didn't suffer any incident from that. But there are trees down everywhere, things uprooted everywhere, flooding, and then the absolute weirdest part of everything was that after all this had gone through on the weekend and so forth, and we all were starting to dry out, there was this freak rainstorm last night that dumped about 5 inches of water in the northern Maryland area. And this morning, there were school cancellations due to rain. And in the 15 years that I've been here, I don't think I've ever heard schools canceled because of rain. They get canceled by snow, they get canceled by hurricanes, but just rain, it's pretty wild, because there was massive floodings. There was reporting of some sinkholes along one of the interstates, which is absolutely wild, because this is not an area for sinkholes. So it has just been weird, downright weird, from all this. But Lord willing, I think we're coming out the other side here. And my long-distance service is working tonight, and the Internet was off for me for about 3 days, 3-4 days from the cable company. And lots of people, I think most of the people in our general area have finally gotten power back. But even as late as Sunday night, there were signs up at the local grocery store saying we reserved the right to limit bags of ice on a one-per-person basis, because they could not keep ice in there long enough from people who needed to freeze their freezers.
Or cool their martinis.
I don't think the martinis were the issues around here. People around here, they'll drink their beer warm if need be. But
well, yeah, I'm talking about Washington D.C. area.
Well, who knows? Who knows with those people? But yeah, there's still a lot of damage out here though. And even today, I went down to a meeting from a vendor down right off the Beltway today, and there was a sign up, one of the electronic signs over the Beltway saying that, passage to Virginia on 95 South was blocked, and to take 495, which is the Washington Beltway, and go around the district and go to Virginia that way. And that apparently had to do with the flooding that occurred last night. So it's pretty weird. Pretty weird.
I bet you it was dicey crossing Chesapeake Bay.
Well,
on the bridge tunnel.
I know that the bridge was closed early during the hurricane, and stayed closed for a long time.
I mean, that's a heck of a long drive.
Yeah, I would think that was the first bridge to close on the onset of the hurricane. What happened last night? I don't know.
Aren't you glad it was a Category 2?
Yeah, this is the lightweight one,
yeah,
man.
Think if you would have been hit by a real big one.
Yeah, I'll tell you, we got. It was interesting where we are. I expected more direct rain than we got. We got a lot of rain, but I was really kind of expecting more. But man, there was a lot of wind, and a lot of trees that have just been torn to shred all over the place. You still see that as you drive along and so forth. It was big. It was big, even if it didn't meet up to some of the headlines that were pushed early. It was big, and it caused a lot of damage.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of being in Florida at Disneyland Disney World, during the middle of a Category 2 hurricane that was a fluke hurricane that decided that it didn't know whether it wanted to go east and west, and so it moved back and forth across Orlando 3 times over a 24-hour period.
Oh, my gosh.
That was funny. It was really funny. Experiencing the eye of a hurricane 3 times in 24 hours was a very surreal experience. So.
Sounds like.
But let's go ahead. Kevin and I are here in the Chicago area, and it's wonderful here. Everything's great. So let's go ahead and kick off the show. We've got a lot of news to catch up on. And, well, gee, who wants to go first? Arnie, you got a bunch of stories, don't you?
Sure. Yeah, I have a few. I try to filter out all the SCO stuff. I mean, cause, like InfoWorld this week comes out with a whole SCO all the time issue, and of course InfoWorld is now increasingly a two-page pamphlet rather than a magazine. But it's definitely shrinking. It's funny because their sister publication, Information Week, also published by the same firm, is huge this week, you know, and like InfoWorld is 60 pages, most of which are ads. One of the interesting things is the Red Hat story. In the shadow of all the SCO stuff, Red Hat is announced, of course, that their revenues were up, and I haven't looked at the Red Hat stock today. It is current $4.50, I guess, if that's right. Let's see.
Yeah, well, now there's no question that the people...
No, it's over 10, excuse me. It's 10.6.
The people already are saying that there's absolutely no question that they would have had a better quarter had SCO and the FUD machine not gotten in the way, but they still had a reasonable quarter.
Yeah, and there's and that's exactly what the article I'm citing on the Linux Show site says. Red Hat revenue is up despite SCO claims, and it's really good. I mean, you know, in the shadow of all this, all the craziness with the SCO case, when you have the number one Linux distribution coming in with really good business report and saying business is good and open source, this makes us look good.
And making real profits.
And making real profits and making real progress. Their latest enterprise server apparently is receiving very, very favorable mentions in the press.
But I think it's important that we focus on the fact that they're generating real profits.
Yeah. I mean, you know why? Because they have a real business plan, unlike some other companies that don't seem to have any business plan.
They're not generating profits off of Microsoft.
Yeah, or litigations. You know. But the Red Hat revenue story is pretty good. Pretty good read. Another one is, what do you do when you're worried about SCO action? From Computer Weekly. And basically, they recommend inventorying Linux assets and stuff. If you're really paranoid, they do point out that it's not likely that SCO is going to win, and basically that's what InfoWorld is saying in their big story. It's the cover story of this week's issue of InfoWorld. If SCO loses, if SCO wins, of course one of the things they don't, you know, they look at it as a dichotomy, and of course in the news media it's always really easy to portray everything as a dichotomy. They rarely goes all one way or all the other way, but SCO is likely, very likely, to lose, and their evaluation of what happens if SCO loses is pretty much on target. They're worried about derivative works haunting Linux if SCO wins, and that's probably true, but SCO is not likely to win. And our good friend Rob Enderle from the Enderle Group is who's been a Clueless pundit of the week, month of the week, a couple times on the Linux Show, is going 6-4 in favor of SCO. And his reasoning is really funny. In a trial, SCO is a little guy and IBM is a giant. SCO alleges the large company took this stuff and gave it away. SCO's got the advantage. I mean, this is really nailing it down really well. Hey, Rob, did you have to think more than 5 seconds to put that out there? You know, basically, I think it's SCO is highly likely to win, lose rather, especially since they haven't anything to stand on. The best article of this week is Building Linux Boxes from VAR Business, written by Rob Wright. And this talks about a new, well, not a new, but a market that Linux has been trying to break into, and that is the white box market. And apparently there have been some movements in that direction, especially over in our friend David Mooring's area in New Zealand, Australia area. And people are finding a market for Linux boxes, and this is like this. I read this article and I'm reminded about the mid 1980s when IBM PC had kind of a monopoly on the business computer market. You know, everybody says you got to buy IBM, you know, and of course Apple was there and a few other the early microcomputer manufacturers still around, but. And what happened to IBM was really quite amazing. Compaq came in with this clone, and open technology basically took over. And the whole PC market, though, the things that Linux has thrived on, or at least got their foot in the door so easily, is built on the open technology of the hardware. And you think about what would happen if that could happen with software, too. You know, in spite of all the FUD and all the crazy business, Microsoft fighting us and SCO fighting us and every, you wonder is, you know, if we had a level playing field with this open technology software, you would think that we could pull another Compaq, you know, and that would establish a substantial market. You know, that's what I'm thinking. And that's a good article. It's quite long, too.
Okay. Well, Doc, do you have any stories from Geek Cruises?
Oh, I hardly know where to begin. There's several. I mean, one was that Linus spoke at some length about all kinds of stuff. And it's funny because I was going over some tapes that I recorded all this on mini CDs, which of course are Sony mini DVs or whatever they are, little discs that you can record things on. What are they called? MDs, mini discs. Okay. Of course, they're done in A-Track, which is ATRAC. It's a Sony proprietary format, and you can really only plug this and do USB stuff with it with a Windows machine. So it's a kind of pain in the butt. So I was transferring some of the content from these over to tapes, and I found a tape of Ted Show's talk at OSCON in July saying that 2.6 kernel would be out in a couple months. Well, it's been a couple months, you know, and it's not out. And Linus basically said it'll be ready when it's ready, but he talked a lot about the process of working on the kernel now that he's not doing much coding anymore. He's mostly doing administration. His talk... and I'm looking at his slides here, because I took pictures of all his slides, is that he's managing the kernel as opposed to writing it, and he divided his concerns down to two. One was about people, and the other was about tools, which he went into some detail on. But he said it's been interesting trying to find what he calls calm, rational, non-flaming developers to groom into... To kind of move up the ladder to become maintainers and eventually, that also have good technical taste. And he says that finding all of those characteristics in one human being is really hard. He talked about his good technical managers that he's had, Alan Cox, Andrew Morton, and others, and how, you know, Alan's left to go off and pursue things, and he's needing more people to kind of move up into positions there. And he sees some good candidates, but he said that there's sort of an interesting, growing, developing thing going on in the kernel, that it's been hard to manage so many people and so many changes. He said, year-to-date in 2003, the kernel has had 12,479 changes, 2,386 merges, not counting apply-by-proxy patches, an average of around 9 per day. He's got 554 individual developers. The top 10% did 78% of all the changes. The top 20% did 90%. But there's a long tail involved there, and that's where he's looking for his future developers to be working on stuff. He said that in source control, which has been a really interesting problem there, he needs support for parallelism and for random people trying small things, many of which never get merged back. And it's just... He said it's not just unconnected but distributed, and so he really, you know, he likes BitKeeper, and you know, he, yet a lot of people don't like it for proprietary reasons, but he says CVS just doesn't do it. So he just had a lot of stuff to say about a lot of things, but here's the most interesting thing. I asked him a question toward the end that brought out an interesting response that I can't remember enough of to treat right, but the point was still a good one. I asked him, what is it going to take for us to have the big OEMs producing and marketing a Linux laptop? Not just a white box that they'll market, but a laptop. And he said basically that there are real problems here that are to some degree political. And one is that, for example, Intel comes out and develops, says the Centrino, and then releases no device drivers with it. And this does not encourage OEMs to develop a Linux laptop based on a Centrino chip. And I made the point that we know that Linux was used to develop the Centrino, that the people involved in the Centrino development project at Intel were using Linux. They probably have the device drivers. And he said, and that they're playing a game where they're waiting for the market demand. And, of course, what came up in that and subsequent conversations was that, in fact, all of the OEMs are deeply in bed with Microsoft. And it is going to take a huge amount of market demand, probably from one big customer. It's going to take a Boeing or a Walmart or somebody like that to go to one of the big OEMs and say, here's the deal. We want you to make a Linux laptop. And we want Intel to know it, too. We want them to release the device drivers. We want them to release the specifications. We want them, you know, we want suspend that works. We want you to fix a number of the problems that you know, are only getting solved right now through your relationships with Microsoft. And we want those things to happen as soon as possible. We'll guarantee the market for that. And that's what it's going to take. And so, you know, anyway, that was an interesting set of conversations, not just in that one talk that Linus gave, but in subsequent ones involving Linus and Ted Show, for example. Ted gave his usual introduction and then sort of like a 101 and a 201 on the kernel, which is good for me to sit in on because I'm not a technical guy, but it allowed me to sort of steep myself in it much as one might in an immersion course, an immersion language course. And in a question, in a Q&A there afterwards, when I talked to Ted, I asked him about something that I may have brought up on the show before, that I think it was OSCON, or maybe it was at Linux World, they run together for me, but there was a Microsoft guy that spoke there, and afterwards he told me that it's Microsoft's official position to consider IBM and HP and others that have people that are involved in kernel development for Linux the enemy because they are involved in that, and that it's erroneous to say that Linux is being developed by people who are not working for these companies, that in fact these other companies are competing with Microsoft because they're contributing to the kernel, and that threatens Microsoft. And Ted said, well, in fact, that's quite true. And that was an interesting thing to hear. And Linus also said in his own way that he welcomed corporate involvement as far as it went because, for example, IBM cares about multiprocessing that scales down to 2- and 4-way and up as far as they can push it with each round of kernel version. And so that was an interesting thing as well. He said, you know, you might not get that from a Sun that might only care about, you know, 8- and 16-way and up, and really only care about what the big iron does, because there's a lot wider market down in the small iron part of the market. So that was, and there's just a lot of subtle stuff around that involves, in some cases, companies that are very interested as Microsoft, IBM and HP are, and less interested in other cases. Linus said that, for example, while it's very good to have people like Ted that are working at IBM and on the kernel, that it is, in fact, very hard to get corporate support for some of the really important developers at Linux, that are working on Linux, that you'd think that they could get more support, but you're really not getting it. That was another thing that he said. So those are just a couple of the things that went down on the boat that were interesting. There's a guy named accelerator known as SLAC, who gave a talk on the history of the web and his involvement with it, because he had, when Tim Berners-Lee first showed off the web at a conference in Houston, he had two servers running, one at CERN, where Tim worked, and the other at Paul's office at SLAC in Palo Alto at Stanford. And so Paul was saying that he had, in fact, had the first server. And he talked about the role of NextStep in all of this, because he said that both those boxes were Next boxes, both of which are still in commission and working and serving up web pages, which I didn't know either. Are we all still here, by the way?
Yep.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. So that and he talked. He also said the first email that was not part of, that was a free and open email, out in the universe. But his point really was about the non-commercial origins of the web and of the net in the academic world and in the high energy physics world, and how important it was to remember and maintain the value systems that those non-commercial entities brought to the development of the net first, and then of the web, and of email, and of other things like that. And he reiterated and supported some of the stuff that we've been saying about, for example, the NEA principles, that nobody owns it, everybody can use it, and anybody can improve it. That Linux has that quality, and so do these various protocols and practices that built the net. And I'd say Paul's around 60 or so. He's one of the, kind of one of the unheralded heroes that's done a very important thinky grunt work back in the day. And it's important to have guys like that come along and remind us of what went down back then. And he was just another guy that spoke on the boat. And, In my keynote, I don't want to hog the floor here, but I'll just tell you briefly about this. And it was an insight that I got, and I do have the presentation. I'll put it up on the net soon. But on Glacier Bay, the interesting thing about Glacier Bay is the glaciers have retreated, and plant succession is demonstrating itself along the 65-mile length of the bay, where you've got mature hemlock forests at the south end where the glacier first retreated 200 years ago. And you've got like lichens on rocks and little bits of grass up where the glaciers are still retreating. And what that told me in a way was that we have something similar happening right now in business, where for the last 200 years we've had an industrial regime that has more or less run our understanding of how business ought to work. And it came along, there's another book that I was given by a guy who works at Microsoft, by the way, about the history of retailing and what happened to culture in France when the big department stores came along. And in those department stores, it invented the shopper and the consumer. It was the first time that fixed prices came along and a distribution system was controlled by the supply side. And that's breaking up now. There's a great piece in the New Yorker last week by Adam Gopnik about the death of the department store. And there we're seeing an old industrial regime dying and a new one that I think open source and Linux have a lot to do with that's only beginning to gain a foothold. It's like we're just seeing the earliest stages of plant succession. That was sort of my insight. And I think it was an interesting one because it made me more patient about the prospects for, changing business culture around that. Anyway, so that's, in a nutshell, some of the things that went down.
Yeah, well, I sort of completely agree with you on this. I have noticed over the last couple of months that a lot of the things that we have really made battle for over the last couple of years are all of a sudden, if you go back 6 months ago, I was pretty blue about the state of the direction that our country was going in. And I'm really pleased to see that the people in Congress listen to the people in the general public and stopped some of these massive aggregations that were going on in terms of the communications companies that, you know, are a throwback to this dinosaur industrial age that you're talking about, Doc. And I'm really glad that the people in Congress have apparently, for the first time in many, 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 many years, woken up and you know, realized that business is local and you need to foster small business development, not stifle it, because it's the future.
Here's something, by the way, that this is a message from my friends in the Howard Dean campaign, and I have a neutral stance on this, but I have a lot of friends there. They're looking for hackers. They are recruiting Linux hackers right now to help them. This campaign's being run to a large degree on Linux, okay? And what they're benefiting from right now, the reason they're using the net so well is basically a lot of individuals have adopted the Dean campaign simply because it hasn't sold out. It has nothing to do with the politics. It has everything to do with whether or not the candidate has sold out to special interests, and he does not appear to have done that. So of course, people are accreting around it. But in any case, there's an all points bulletin going out. If you want to just write to me, I'm not hard to find, doc@searles.com or doc@ssc.com, and I'll put anybody who's listening and wants a gig with the Dean campaign, being a Linux sysadmin or doing some of the other work that they need database people, let me know and I'll patch you through to the campaign, or to my friends that work there and are looking or recruiting. But the point I wanted to make, actually, and it's consistent with this, it's been since a year ago last summer that Larry Lessig gave his talk at OSCON, where he talked about the challenge to the geek community, and really, you know, I thought it was his I Have a Dream speech. It was a powerful speech talking about the resistance that the past exerts on the future, and it almost predicted SCO in some ways. You know, what he said was that creativity and innovation always builds on the past. The past always tries to control the creativity that builds on it. Free societies enable the future by limiting the power of the past, and ours is less and less a free society unless we do something about it. And so it's not just that he's predicting that SCOs will come along to try and impose the old, you know, their interpretation of an old copyright regime on the future, but that, you know, our response to it has to be to change the laws that made that kind of thing possible. And I see that happening. I think that's coming along.
That certainly helps, though.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we take a real short break, get ourselves geared up for another segment of news. Everybody kick back and relax. We're going to take about a 2 or 3 minute break just to get ourselves reorganized, and we'll be right back on the other side of the break with the second segment of tonight's edition of The Linux Show, for September the 23rd, 2003. Now, y'all hang in there. We got some very interesting stuff coming up in the second half, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
If he's the sun and she's the sea and she bleeds, every dawn to every dusk of every day. If she is the boat and he is the breath that fills the gale, the crest and fall, the thrust and thrall, the billow and sail. If he is the sextant, she is the stars by which he guides. From sombering sea to port at every even tide. If she is the gull and he is the sanguine song she cries, a wistful wordless question blows to see the sky. If he is the halcyon calm and she's a summer storm that drowns him in her furious skin and hungry wild and warm.
It is here that we have anchored every secret of ours. If he is the stream and she is the tale, his baffling tones, the dream of every desert, every empty well. If she is the cliffs and he is the waves, they shatter here. Steal away the stone and hopes of creeping near. From unity is impossible, we understand. But this doesn't stop the sea and shore from mingling in the sand. The wonder of the current, the widening of the eel. When some dragons call, the song of such a sailor's reel to the whisper of the tide. So far below the ebb and flow, so deep within reach of love, where only love can go. The recent lakes were over to the tide. Rivers in the deep and quiet places of our hearts, tumbling in the deep and quiet places of our hearts. Every ocean has its depths that we could never hope to chart. It is here that we have anchored every secret of our hearts. Vanishing breath, they enter the waves. For only the drowned can be saved. The weight of their trust shall carry them swift. So deep below the ebb and flow, and their hearts start crying.
And we're back.
This is the Linux Show for September the 23rd, 2003. If you're wondering why things sound better tonight, actually they sound terrible from my end. My phone is really screwed up tonight, but got landline problems. But anyways, the hum monster, as it's so often called in the IRC room, is gone because we have acquired a new piece of equipment in our arsenal that has replaced one of our old sound cards that was built into an old external modem, and that has now been replaced. And thus you're hearing the beautiful dulcet tones of the Linux Show in its real and pure form. Hopefully we're going to continue improving the equipment. We're going to be shortly launching a campaign. I'm tentatively dubbing the campaign Kevin Wants a Gentner, and we're going to start that campaign up pretty soon to try and get some people, primarily businesses, to donate a little bit of money so that the Linux Show can finally upgrade to the Gentner unit that we've been trying to get for the last 2 or 3 years. But every week we try and improve it a little bit, and we'll keep on working at it as time goes on. So let's go ahead and continue with the show. Doc, we were talking in the break about some of the very unusual social aspects to Geek Cruises, and why don't you fill the listeners in on a little bit of what was going on?
Yeah, because I don't want to give the impression that this thing is all lectures by notables. It was actually just a great time. In addition to all the various shore places that we went to, the ports of call, we had two events in the evening that were a lot of fun. One of them was a geek improv evening where where, for example, one geek was invited, there'd be two geeks sitting at a bar and two participants, in other words, in the thing, were volunteered, and one had to, one was the girl that the guy was trying to come on to, the other one was the guy, and the guy had to come on using nothing but commands, but Linux and Unix commands of various kinds, and the girl had to respond with sentences that, for example, had to include the name of a Microsoft product, just fun stuff like that, you know. And there was another one where everybody had to speak in nothing but lies about something, and so there's like a lot of fun back and forth between like the Python and the Perl people, you know, that kind of thing. And on another, as part of that same evening, maybe it was another evening, Charles Roth, who's a very funny guy, he's at thedance.net is his website, and who gave a very good talk on collaborative software and stuff like that. And is an old friend of Neil's, who puts on the Geek Cruises, is a Gilbert and Sullivan fan, and he took a rewrite of a Gilbert and Sullivan song that Rick Mowen did, that was about SCO, and it was very, very funny. And he did another rewrite on it. He enlisted a bunch of guys to be the chorus while he sang the lead on it, and it was quite funny. And he put the lyrics up on a screen.
Was that Major General?
I could be. I don't know. I'm not up on Gilbert and Sullivan, but I will have again watched Linux Journal, and you'll see a picture gallery that has it up there, and you know, and I'll put it in.
Someone should have recorded an MPEG on it.
I recorded an MPEG of some of it. The Sony thing of some of it, and so we have bits of it, but I don't have the whole thing. But in any case, we do have the lyrics and links to the lyrics, and so that'll be cool. So anyway, it was a lot of fun, and of course, one person referred to it as, of course, you know, food camp and drinking camp, because you get to drink and not quite as much as you want. You do have to pay for your drinks, but the food is all basically free once you pay for the trip, and there's a lot of it, and it was very, very good. There's a Holland America is a Dutch has a Dutch staff and Dutch and Indonesian mostly, and it was a combination of the two. It was really very good. So, and there was just a lot of schmooze time with folks. Had a really good time.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, Kevin, do you have any new releases for us this week?
Yeah, there's a new release of Knoppix out. If people haven't played with it, it's one of the better CD-only distributions of Linux. It has pretty much everything you want, including full desktop with most of the toys you would expect. So if you need a CD that you can just pop in any computer if you're out on the road or whatever, it's definitely something you want to check out. Also, there's a lot of security updates in the last week or two. Sunmail, of course, has its yearly security issue, which needs to be patched. OpenSSH, unfortunately, seems to be developing a Sunmail-like history with bugs and exploits, and has actually just come out with a second one in the week yesterday. Even if you updated, you've got to update again if you haven't already today. There's also an interesting exploit for Pine, which, although I don't think there's been any interesting exploits for it yet, it could come up with a rather embarrassing email worm if somebody were to play with it.
Anything else?
That's the big ones for this week.
Okay, Russ, have you got a couple of hot stories of the week?
Yeah, I got a few. I normally don't spend too much time with my own columns, but since we had the SCO portion tonight, I wanted to throw this in. My column over at processor.com called Evaluating SCO came out last weekend, and in fact, I was at a meeting today where people were asking, you know, what's the threat of SCO, etc. So it's still a timely topic, and one paragraph in here may be worth people quoting, and that is, am I suggesting that Linux users ignore the potential risk if SCO's claims are true? Not at all. I'm merely suggesting that you evaluate the risk and put it in its appropriate place among all business risks. For me, the risk of SCO Group having a serious hold over Linux fits somewhere between the risk of America going communist and the risk of the Earth being colonized by Martians. So I hopefully that will make some things clear to some people. But you know, this nonsense has been going on for just too damn long, quite frankly. So it's time we call a spade a spade. On more substantial matters, there's an interesting. By the way, all the links are on the Linux Show webpage for the stuff I'm talking about here. InternetNews.com has an interesting announcement from Red Hat, and talking about how they're going looking beyond just Linux and talking about constructing an open source architecture that will be the base of open source solutions in the future within the enterprise. So it's you know, some people have accused it of being a .NET like vapor, and maybe there is some vapor here for sure, but we'll see. I mean, Red Hat, at least, like we said earlier in the program, actually does have a business plan, unlike some other ones floating around. So if they're making these statements, I have to believe that they have something in mind. So this one definitely bears some watching. From there, some people may have seen the business of Ford is switching to Linux. Oh, Ford is not switching to Linux. Oh, Ford is switching to Linux after all. The latest volley in these stories that seem to be blurting out all over the place is in Computer World this week, and it basically says that Ford isn't going to be using Linux on the desktop right now, but it is going to be using Linux in several places on the back end. So, so as in with most things, we are seeing Linux work its way into yet another large organization. It's not necessarily taking the front and center position yet, but let's give it a little bit more time. I think it's good news, at least, if nothing else. Anyone else follow that volley that went on this past week or so about that?
Oh, you mean the Ford stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because you wonder what kind of input Microsoft marketing had into the switch and the re-switch. Similar thing happened, seemed to happen in what's that German city that went to Linux? I can't think of the name. They seemed to, for a minute, Microsoft sent their bigwigs over to Germany to pitch Microsoft, and of course Microsoft eventually lost, but they seemed to backtrack for a couple few days and then, or maybe a week, and then all of a sudden they came back and said, "Oh, we're going to do Linux." Of course, we find out that they're really actually doing both, which is the way you'd expect it.
Well, then my final piece for links tonight is a story over at NewsForge from about a week ago. It's Brunswick's Business Integration Engine Thrives as Open Source Project. And this didn't get a whole lot of play that I saw inside the Linux websites, but frankly, I think this is one of the most important stories I've seen in several weeks. And that is, here is a situation where an end-user organization is realizing that if they take some of the technology that they've developed, make it open source, that they can win with it. Not in terms of trying to sell it as software, because the organization that put this together to begin with, Brunswick, is not a software company. That's not their deal. But if they open up the code, they can save greatly on their own support and upgrade costs, et cetera, by bringing others into it. It makes for a whole richer situation. So So I think this is terrific, and I think this is the sort of thing that we need to be seeing more of in the open source world, and we have to be encouraging corporations to look at too. That the thing that drives open source is not that a few software companies are doing things. The thing that drives open source is that there are all sorts of end users and end user organizations that, when they cooperate and collaborate, can do powerful things, and in the end save themselves a lot of time, money, agony, and so forth. It is tremendously empowering, and the more that these sorts of organizations get this notion together, the more interesting things we're going to see come about in open source development. So that's pretty much my my group for the week right there.
Okay. Well, looks like we're going to finish early then tonight. What? How amazing is that? Well, not having
we haven't talked about SCO yet.
No.
We can add another hour to the show.
And you know what, Arnie, I was going to go and talk about a story about SCO, but when you said, you know, earlier in the show that we've talked enough about SCO, I think we have for you know, 1 week or so. I was enjoying the stories Doc was telling about the Geek Cruise, and I basically don't want to get myself all pissed off talking about SCO anymore this week.
Well, I mean, everybody's read the letters anyway. That's the only thing that big happened
so,
this week.
So I'm going to just hold off the story that I was going to talk about till next week. It'll be just fine another week from now, because it hasn't even hit the press yet. So why don't we go ahead and call it a night? It's a great place to stop. It's been a nice, interesting show this week. We are anticipating having about three or four guests in a row lined up. Got a whole bunch of vendors for the next couple of shows. So all of you out there listening, make sure you line up. We might have some surprise guests coming up as well. Looks like Robin didn't make it tonight, so we'll try and get him hooked up for next week. But everybody, we really do appreciate when you come out and listen to the Linux Show. Our audience grows every week, and so it grows only because of you, the listeners out there, telling all your friends and compatriots about the effort that we take every week to try and put on a good show for you. So please, come back next week and tell 10 friends about the Linux Show. We'll be right here, same time, same place next week. But until then, we're out of here, everybody.